function to function. Justice for the human family, we demand it. Justice, truth, freedom, equality's a must. Us decolonization of the planet, so bust this. People be the power, now we build the justice. Pouring at system divination, how we build the justice. Welcome to planet to the podcast, build the justice. Build the justice, build the justice. Build is to add on or do away with it. Justice.
Welcome to Building Justice, a podcast by Sacramento State Center on Race, Immigration, and Social Justice. We explore critical issues affecting our communities with the hopes of creating a healthier and more just world. I'm Monica Tuchka, a professor at Sac State, and I'm here with my political science colleague, Professor Christina Flores-Victor. Christina, you have an office three doors down from my office, and we're both in our offices right now, but we're talking over Zoom on this beautiful campus. Hi, it's the first week of classes. It's a really busy time. How's the first week going?
First week is going great. My students already, I don't know, I have a feeling about this semester. It's a really good group of students this semester.
Yeah, I'm excited too. And they're ready. They are doing the reading. They are ready. Let's move on. Our guest for today is Vice Mayor and Council Member of District 6, Eric Guerra. Eric was born in Espardo, California, to farm workers, and he began picking fruit at the age of 5, often for 12 hours a day. He put himself through college at Sac State and through a master's degree at Sac State, Stingers Up. And while pursuing his education, Eric worked as a janitor at Sac State and sometimes slept in his car. And today, Eric Guerra is the vice mayor of the city of Sacramento and a city council member representing District 6. District 6 is located to the south and to the east of Sac State, and it's roughly it has roughly 680,000 people, hardworking residents who are very diverse. Hello, Vice Mayor and Councilmember Eric Guerra. It's really great to have you on the podcast today.
Well, thank you, Professor Tuchka, and good morning, and thanks, Professor Victor, for your time here today. And feel free to call me Eric. You know, for those of you, of us at Sac State, they've known me for many years as a student, as an alum, you know, as a volunteer. It's just great to be on this podcast, talking today about this. I do have one clarification. That was a great intro, but I was actually born in the same adobe house that my mother was born in the mountains of Michoacán, Mexico. And interestingly enough, we just got back from Mexico, where I took my son there, and showed him, you know, the same house that I was born in, the same little room where my mother and half of my 76 first cousins were also born in, you know, that to this day, that adobe house still only gets running water twice a week.
Wow. Thank you so much for correcting that.
Yeah, it's an interesting experience because, I came in the 80s during a time when the economy in Mexico had tanked and you know, famine was a real thing. You know, hunger was a real issue. And so, like many, the story of many folks, my mother, my brother and I were undocumented. My father had gotten his green card because my grandfather was part of the Bracero program. But we had to come across the border. And interestingly enough, over the last administration during the Trump era, watching some of those videos and footages of particularly the one with the father and the daughter in the river brought back some challenging memories. You know, my mother had to run across the border. And because we were young, my brother and I, my sister would be later born in Woodland, California. But my brother and I were put in the back of a van and, you know, not knowing whether we would meet my mother on the other side or not, but we had to come across. And fortunately, you know, we met my mother, but I can only imagine what she was going through and thinking about as she came across. Would she make it over and not reunite us? Or maybe we would make it across and be in a country without any language or connection, and her be caught by immigration and back, but all for an opportunity.
Eric, what you just shared reminds me, and I hope it reminds all of the listeners, about the need for comprehensive immigration reform, and that no family should have to worry about being separated from one another as they seek opportunity and pursue the American dream. Christina, I know you have a lot of great questions that you want to ask, and so I'm going to pass the mic over to you and take it away.
Thank you so much, Monica. Eric, I do have a couple of questions for you about how our students here at Sac State and more broadly in the CSU can get involved in public service. And we think that as an alumni of the CSU system, you'd be uniquely qualified to answer these. So my first question is, you know, as many people in the greater Sacramento region might already know, you are a two-time alum of Sacramento State. I was hoping you could tell us a bit more about your time here at Sac State. And I think that your experiences have a lot of similarities to our students right now, taking courses, trying to finish their degrees, working, being first-generation scholars. So if you don't mind telling us a little bit about your experiences here.
Of course, you know, proud to be, a multi-alum. I'd say I got my bachelor's of science in electrical and electronic engineering, and then my master's in public policy and administration. But I also, joke that I got my certificate here on campus too. People ask, well, what was it in? Was it in education or teaching? And I said, no, it was my marriage certificate. I met my wife in the master's program, and she's an alum. And so, yes, you know, we are big hornets in this household. But, you know, it's interesting because I wasn't planning on going to Sac State. In fact, I was a farm worker all my life and as a kid. And one thing that I only cared about was just getting out of poverty and trying to figure out a way. And so I was going to enlist in the military, but it was the college assistant micro program at Sac State that found out that I was a seasonal farm worker and that I qualified based on my aptitude tests for the military for the minority engineering program. But it gave me an opportunity to study engineering at Sac State. And I didn't even know what engineering was, frankly. They asked me what major I wanted to do. And I said, well, what's a major? And they're like, well, the things you like to do, what do you like to do in high school? I'm like, well, you know, I like sports, you know, I like shop. And they're like, well, that's engineering, you know, it's fixing things and making things. I'm like, okay, I'll do engineering, having no clue, you know, how hard it really could be. And, you know, our family, like many still today, you know, and I try to go and speak to some of the farm working communities and help them learn about as well about opportunities. They're just not as informed. If you grow up in a household where your parents went to UC or my wife who went to NYU, you know, their parents went to another university. So it became a daily conversation, you know. So I that time in my undergrad has given me a big perspective because I wasn't engaged. I worked a lot. When I first moved to Sacramento, I ended up living in my car. And then I like many students, I was a night janitor. I worked at night did classes in the daytime. And my world revolved basically around work, you know, and class. But to your point, getting involved, how do you do that? And I found time to get involved because I cared about particular issues affecting students. You know, when on campus I got involved, when I felt that there wasn't enough funding for students who were wanting to do their senior engineering projects or compete. And I saw that a lot of money was going to, you know, barbecues and hot dogs and social stuff, which is great. I mean, I'm an advocate for student life, but I felt that there wasn't enough for that. So on campus, I started advocating with a lot of us working students about, hey, we need support so that those of us who don't have the flexibility to do this stuff can do this stuff. The other issue we found out, like many of us, we would walk from the light rail station to the campus. Before, you know, now you walk there and you see, green striping and crosswalks and sidewalks. There used to be no sidewalks between 65th Street light rail station to the campus, and there wasn't a tunnel. In fact, we would run across Folsom Boulevard and climb over the railroad tracks to get on campus if we were to get there on time. If not, you had to walk or take the bus, which, you know, would get jammed up. But a number of us students went to City Hall and we said, you know, we just need better lighting, better walking, the essentials just to get to class. It doesn't take a lot. You don't have to join a club. You don't have to, you know, go out and do a major internship if you don't have the time. But there are small ways to be involved that you can speak from a life experience that later on help you when you're looking for a career or a job. And so one thing message that I would tell students is that you may be working a lot, but try to say, take a step back and find ways that feel fulfilling for your engagement. What are the things that matter to you versus just trying to do what I think many students do is fill their resume with a number of clubs, like 10 clubs, but never really are engaged. So figure out what is your passion and think about how that adds value and how it enriches you. Then when you go to an interview, you can articulate what you learn from there.
That's great. I have a follow-up for you on that. I do think that sometimes students feel like these extracurriculars need to be these very long experience, right? You know, like a semester-long internship or a year-long leadership position. But some of what you're saying there can be these very short-term moments too, right? Where going to City Hall and advocating for better lighting and things like that. Do you think that even these kind of short-term experiences later on help people in their careers and thinking about like that step to that first job, that it's possible to have more of these kind of small moments and that they're still beneficial for a career later on?
Definitely, it doesn't have to be a drawn out internship or experience. Like if you have the ability to, and if you can tighten your belt as much as it's already tightened, I encourage you to do so, because what those internship and experiences do create when you have length is it's relationships, and those relationships carry a long time. And like any relationship, whether it's with your family or a spouse or a loved one, it takes time to build that relationship. So there is a strong benefit to try to do it. So I encourage you to do it. But for your career, and if you can't, what employers and what folks who are looking at students when they're interviewing is, what were the critical thinking concepts that you took into place to achieve that? And if it's as easy as, you know what, we saw this problem, we organized 5 students, we drafted a letter and we sent it to them, and then we asked for a response. So if you can do that and you can find ways to participate in things that show that you can accomplish a task without a lot of supervision, then that is a value to employers.
Great. I have another question that's it's somewhat related, but thinking about your experiences here at Sac State when you're a student, and I myself an alum too, but from what you see in your office, from what you see kind of as a broader view of the region, how do you think that the experiences of students today are different than they were, you know, maybe 10 years ago when we were on campus at that time, or even 20 years ago? And I think I'm thinking specifically here about things like increasing cost of living or the increasing cost of tuition. So the challenges that students are facing today, how do you feel like they are perhaps different than when we were here at Sac State?
I would say that they're different, but maybe I'll say in a way that they're more exacerbated. I came from, you know, when I did my FAFSA, I think my parents' combined income was $18,000 a year. I mean, we were in poverty. So the issues that I faced as a freshman on campus are probably what a grand majority of students are facing now. So it's not that it's new, but it's at a much larger scale. And it's affecting more than just those at the very low income level. The middle class families are facing that. You know, families whose parents did have an education and still can't provide assistance for housing or transportation are now at a much larger scale. And because of the lack of actual construction of multifamily housing, rents in our region have increased. And also, the way we planned our cities didn't make for the best public transportation. If you have to own a car, that's a payment. If not, it's insurance, it's gas, it's maintenance. And if you are in an accident, then, you know, the cost could be even more so. So avoiding that liability is important, but it's difficult when you don't have public transportation. It's a challenge when you have a population that has to worry about how they're going to feed their kids as well as they're studying to provide better. So, I think the if you're a student listening, is to say is that many of us see that that's happening now. and are trying to make efforts to increase the amount of housing, to look at how we fund more, public transportation. The other thing that I hope our state lawmakers take into consideration is that we haven't fully funded our state university system. And because of it, the lack of class availability and options, because we aren't funding more to address, to have more faculty members, and are the loss of faculty members because we aren't paying our faculty members enough. That as well, we're losing quality faculty. And so we don't have the class availability and the slots available to adjust to working families and the diversity of students. So we have a number of major challenges at both the local, state, and federal level. Now, as a student, what can you do is speak up, talk about your pain, talk about what you hope to see, your visions, because if we don't think about what's going down the next 30 years or 40 years, then we'll make the same mistake as the chancellors, the board of trustees did, and not putting light rail through the campus. You know, they didn't think about what did that mean for a campus that's going to be a lot of working families in the future. And instead, they diverted it from the campus.
Thank you. You brought back a lot of memories, maybe like repressed memories of college for me. One year, I think we slept in a garage because that was all the housing we could afford. And another year, we had mattresses on the floor with four of us sleeping in the same room.
Well, yeah. And, I remember also at the time, this is before AB 540 and the California Dream Act. I was fortunate to get my green card before I graduated high school and got enrolled at SAC. But a lot of the students that that worked in the fields with me and similar, didn't. And so they were sleeping, on my couch and on the floor as well, and having to take two buses from Woodland to, to Sacramento. And, this conversation is bringing back, some difficult memories, some positive memories too, because, that when you have a bunch of people in one house and we're all learning to play guitar, we had a fun time in the evening. It probably annoyed our neighbors, but those are interesting memories at my time on campus.
Yeah. I have one more question for you. Many of our students, and in definitely including a lot of our first generation scholars, they're very interested in careers in public service. I think that's the benefit of us living in the capital region. But as you mentioned earlier in the podcast, they might not have parents or siblings or family members who went to college or who did internships or who are currently holding positions similar to those that they would be seeking out in public service, working in the Capitol or state agencies. So knowing what you know now, right, as a council member and vice mayor, what would be your advice to our undergrads as they are beginning to kind of seek out their careers in public service?
Yeah. Well, number one, don't be shy about reaching out to elected officials or people in leadership. Don't be shy about reaching out to a Sac State alum. In my own office, and even when I was the chief of staff in the legislature in the Capitol, I always had interns, and I always had staffers. And even today, my staff at City Hall, who I rely on for the best advice, are Sac State alums. But they started off by saying, hey, I'm interested in this. And I said, well, come and check it out. And even Sac State alums who wanted to try it out and found out this is not for me, we helped them connect them to alums and friends of ours that were in those professions. But I will say there's a few programs that are underutilized sometimes by our own students that are from Sac State. The Sac Semester program that connects students with internships at the Capitol, and also the Capitol, the Center for California Studies Capitol Fellows program. I was a fellow in the Senate Fellowship program, and you'll be surprised how many Sac State students don't even know that program is from the campus and don't apply. Plus, at the city, we also have a City Year and a lot of other programs that we can connect you that are service based programs to get connected. And then finally, I'll just say it's just important to know what your passion is. Find out what your passion is, because once you find an alum, it doesn't matter if that's their expertise. Once you can articulate what is it that you enjoy and would like to put your energy in, they'll help you get that right person to be a mentor.
Thank you very much. We are going to take a quick break. And when we return, I will turn it over to Professor Tushka, Monica, to discuss policy and issues in the Sacramento region.
Audience, this concludes part one of Christina and my conversation with Vice Mayor and City Council Member of District 6, Eric Guerra. If you're a working class student or a first generation college student, I hope Eric's advice to you proves useful. And if you're an ally of working class students like I am, I think Eric gave us a lot to chew on. We have a responsibility to make the Sac State campus a place where working class students can thrive. And there are things we can do at the campus level, at the city level, and at the state level to make sure that happens. In part two of our conversation with Vice Mayor and City Council Member of District 6, Eric Guerra, we're going to be talking to Eric about economic development, especially in underutilized areas, affordable housing, and homelessness. So don't go away. Just click to the next episode, and our conversation will continue on the other side. But for now, thank you for listening. We hope our ongoing conversations spark understandings, empathies, and motivation to join the struggle for a better future for all. And you just listened to the Building Justice podcast. The information contained in this podcast represents the views and opinions of the hosts and guests and does not necessarily represent the views or opinions of Sacramento State or CRISJ.
All the penalties and the rewards based on the actions. Now, time for building justice. Building justice. Time for